205-A4 by Legislative Council. Those amendments would do three things. One, they would delete the reference to this restriction on the major sub-basins. Secondly, in subsection 7, or in section 7, it would just simply delete subsection 7, which imposes the 45-year limitation on any permit that would be granted under this bill. Because we view the requirements in subsection, or in section 4, which are the hoops that are created, to be onerous enough that the language in section 7 or the time limitation therefore just becomes superfluous. It doesn't really do anything. Then in section 8 is we recommend or ask that the 20 cubic foot per second limitation be increased to 50 cubic feet per second. And if you then look at the bill, if you delete the major sub-basins, that section deals only with legislative approval of transfers of water from one major basin to another major basin. At that point, you're talking about a major activity, and 50 CFS becomes a de minimis amount, not de minimis, but a small amount of water between those major basins. And our view would be that there would be very, very few of those major kinds of activities that would take place that would not exceed the 50 CFS. It wouldn't make sense to build something large enough to transfer water from a major basin to a major basin unless it was a fairly substantial kind of movement of water. At that point, then, the legislative review would be tripped in. So we think that the 20 at that major basin transfer becomes, you know, overly restrictive, and 50 would be a much more appropriate number. So that's the three things that our amendments would do. We think that it would clean up the bill and not then impose those kinds of restrictions on citizens of the state of Oregon in small sub-basin transfers, the South Santa Ana to the Kalapui. You're talking about going from Lebanon to Brownsville, something like that. We don't think that it's necessary to go through this elaborate, expensive process to do that.
Go ahead. Thank you.
I'm Jim Myron, here representing Oregon Trout. On the Senate side, they had five separate work sessions and public hearings coming to where this legislation is at the present time. Oregon Trout supports the legislation. We think it's important that the Water Resources Commission have some guidelines to go by when they look at out-of-basin transfers. One of the items that was brought up in the Senate hearings was the fact that given the Voorhees decision, that it was the feeling that we couldn't do anything to protect transfers of water out of the state without also doing the same thing within the state. So that's why, one of the reasons why we support leaving the sub-basin wording in there as it is, so that there's no difference between somebody out of state and somebody in state. I think the key here is in section 6, where it says that before the Water Resources Commission can approve any out-of-basin transfer, they have to reserve an amount of water adequate for future needs in the basin of origin, including an amount sufficient to protect public uses. And Oregon Trout feels that that protection should be provided to all basins, not just the major basins. So we would be opposed to Mr. Nelson's amendment on the sub-basin. As far as the other two provisions of his amendments, I don't really have a problem with the time situation. As far as the amount, the difference between 20 CFS and 50 CFS is 13,500 gallons a minute. That's a lot of water. And you folks need to decide at what level the legislature wants to become involved in this out-of-basin transfer process.
Representative Jones.
I have a question. In relation to Section 6, it is not being proposed to be removed. So the question I have is, does this not impact, does this impact only the basins and not the sub-basins if we amend the bill as discussed? Bill, maybe you can tell us.
Ask that one more time.
Sure. Well, Jim was saying that he supported Section 6. Section 6 is not being proposed to be removed. So my question is, if we in fact do what Dave is discussing, and that is removing the sub-basin or the sub-basin transfer from the provisions in the bill, would Section 6 still apply even if we remove the sub-basins? That's my question.
Yes, it would.
Yes, it would still apply.
The term basin of origin would apply to all of the major basins.
But not the sub-basins, is that correct? Because if we remove the sub-basin, it wouldn't anyway.
Yes, you remove sub-basin from the definition of basin of origin. And so the basin of origin definition then becomes major basins.
Only.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Representative Jones.
Jim, is that your concern, that the sub-basins ought to also be protected?
Well, it's our concern that any time you're transferring water from one basin to another, regardless of the size of the basin, that you need to apply the provisions of Section 6.
And in current practice, Bill, are you reviewing transfers from sub-basin to sub-basin?
Any such application, Representative Jones, would be reviewed by our department and or our commission under their current rules.
So if
there's a transfer out of an existing water basin into another water basin, our commission in their programs have specifically indicated that they must take that matter to hearing. So there's a special provision made if you're making a transfer between a major basin, one of the basins defined by our commission, and another basin. That same obligation would not apply currently if you were making such a transfer between sub-basins within a basin. That's not to say it would not be reviewed, that there isn't a permit to be issued, that it still isn't looked at and weighed against the public interest, but it would not be subject to the standard that's here under the current practice.
Thank you.
Mr.
Chairman.
Representative Hussey.
I guess I'll just throw out some suggestions here and see how people react to it. I think the biggest concern is with Section 8 and having the legislature have to approve transfers between sub-basins. And so I would, I think, suggest or agree with that suggestion that says eliminate reference to sub-basins in Section 8. I guess I don't know if the committee wants to. Section 7 isn't too exciting to me either, so that we could get rid of that. But then the question, though, that I would have for the people is, if we left sub-basins in terms of the commission having to approve transfers between sub-basins, but eliminated it in terms of the legislature having to approve it, do we still need then to be concerned about the 20 cubic feet per second number, or can we just leave it the way it is in the bill?
You want to respond, Bill?
Any of the people on the panel up there?
The concern, as I understand it, that is being forwarded by Dave is that there are a set of fairly demanding requirements laid out in the statute for a transfer from a sub-basin to another sub-basin. And the concern is that, without regard to what comes to the legislature, someone proposing to use a cubic foot per second of water, let's say, might find themselves having to do all of the things that are recited in Section 4. Now, that's what I understand to be the concern that's being raised. Someone who wanted to make a transfer from one sub-basin to another, wanted to irrigate 40 acres of land.
I understand.
And they may be required to do this fairly lengthy analysis. So that would still be left there with the change that you're proposing, Representative Hossack.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
Would that concern be alleviated if you indicated that language similar to lines 21 and 22 on Section 8, which do give the exception, were lifted and moved up someplace to say that Section 4 of this bill, or whatever will not apply to appropriations diversions less than 20 cubic feet. In other words, then major diversions between sub-basins would be required to jump through all of those hoops, but the minor ones that are being discussed wouldn't, that the legislature wouldn't get involved unless it was basin-to-basin transfer of rather significant size.
I think that's a possible configuration. The committee may want to direct their attention to page 2, line 23. That was the cut that was made on the Senate side to try and deal with the very, very small uses that might be involved in those kinds of transfers. What we attempted to pick up there, I think, as I recall the discussion over on the Senate side, was as you get up to the very head end of these basins, where you may have people that are making domestic use of water, the interest was to make sure that if you were talking about a little use like that, household use, non-commercial lawn and garden kind of activity, ought not be subject to trying to do all these things. And that's the reason for the half a cubic foot per second figure that appears on line 23. Now, obviously, that figure could be something different if you wanted it to be different. Mm-hmm. It could be 5, it could be 1 cubic foot per second. I suppose it could be the 20 cubic feet per second you're talking about.
Mr. Mastica, you finished? Go ahead.
Yeah, I might respond to that after Representative Parkins.
I'm just burning to ask Bill a question. Right. Bill, do we have a problem now, or do you anticipate we'll have a problem, say, during the next decade, with transfers of water between either basins or sub-basins?
There certainly have been in the past, and we would expect there would be in the future, Representative Parkinson, transfers of water between basins or sub-basins in the state of Oregon, where we certainly think they ought to be subject to some scrutiny. We're not talking about, in that sort of thing, the scale of project that I suspect you're thinking of. I, for instance, know of no massive interbasin transfers, either inside or outside the state of Oregon, that are imminent.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Well, Bill, let's phrase it just a little bit differently. Do we have any problems that the department can't presently, in-state, do we have any problems that the department can't presently take care of when they review applications and approve and that sort of thing?
I think my answer to that would be no, except that the system that we use for any potential out-of-state seems now to be beyond our grasp legally. But in-state, I think I'd have to answer that no.
Mr. Chairman, can I just preach a little bit? It looks like we should be restricting our actions to protecting our state's waters from out-of-state. And I think we're getting into an area where we could be causing a lot of problems unnecessarily to municipalities or whomever. I just don't see the sense in trying to solve
I don't disagree with that assessment, Representative Parkinson, except I think the instructions we got out of the Sporhase case was whatever limitations you want to put on out-of-state people, unless you show those same limitations on people in-state, we're going to conclude that it's impermissible. So that brings you to this business then of trying to figure out what size you want to put in there, how big does it have to be, and so on. But when we're all said and done, I think to have what I understand to be a legally enforceable tool for protecting water within a basin, that is going to have to be the same protection provided against an in-state diverter as we would against an out-of-state diverter.
Go ahead.
Well, then again, Bill, on the sub-basins, can you anticipate a problem where neighboring states would be trying to steal water out of a sub-basin and not getting out of a big basin?
We've had examples, Representative Parkinson, and those have come before this assembly as recently as 1985, where we brought, based on your existing law, a bill that moved through the assembly without difficulty that talked about moving a bit of water across the state line from southern Oregon into a project in northern California. In that particular instance, the project straddled the state line. They diverted the water in Oregon. Much of it was used in California. And that matter came forward, and the legislature dealt with it. We may see that scale of thing happening both inside and across the state line.
That was a sub-basin.
Sure, might not even have been a sub-basin transfer. It was just across state lines.
Within a basin.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. That would, that kind of a transfer, Dave Nelson for the record, would still be coming out of a major basin. You can't transfer out of a sub-basin across the state line without going out of a major basin. And the state of Oregon is defined by the state basins in the state. You know, there are 18 major basins in the state. And if you're going to go across state line, you're going out of the state of Oregon out of a major basin. It would always be out of a sub-basin within that basin, but it would go out across the state line from a major basin. It's going to be the Malheur Basin or the Owyhee, or it's going to be the Willamette or something. The Klamath Basin, as it crossed the state line into California, would be coming out of the major Klamath Basin. It would not be coming...
I'm a little confused about that.
It would be coming, in addition, it could be coming out of sub-basin, sub-sub, and so on. But the theory would still be out of that major basin.
Well, I'm a little confused about that. Let me ask Bill. If, in fact, you had the... recognize you have different laws here, but if you had the same, say, the basin, the natural basin, part of it in one state and part of it in another, if you transfer it from the state one side of the state line to the other side of the state line, is the current law clear on that?
Current law simply says if you go across the state line, we don't give a dang what basin it's in. If you go across the state line, you're going to be treated differently than we treat anything else. And
that's the problem.
That's the flaw with the current law.
That's the problem, okay.
I agree with Dave's theory that he just described, and I disagree with his example, I think. It seems to me there could be instances where you could go across the state line and still be within the same
basin.
You could go across the state line, perhaps, and be within the same basin, but simply have moved into another sub-basin. You could conceivably go across the state line and be within the same sub-basin, I suppose.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hostia.
I think, though, that the fairness to Mr. Nelson, he was giving a legal description of basin and not a geographic description. Mm-hmm. And if basin means one of the basins is defined by the Water Resources Department, as indicated in the definition of the bill, I think Mr. Nelson
probably
would be correct.
Mr. Chairman. Judge.
No, I got my question answered the discussion took place. Thank you.
Representative Pickard.
This, in effect, was designed to ward off, it was a preemptive strike on our part against an out-of-state raid for Oregon water. Okay? Now, correct?
The bill as it currently exists in state law.
It exists. So we are protected. This was just an attempt to tidy it up based upon a Supreme Court decision.
To
make us legal.
You are protected, Representative Pickard, until the first time we go to court. In which case, I think if the state law were tested, we would discover the same that Nebraska did, and that is that the Supreme Court would not find that to be a permissible limitation. Now, it's still law as far as we're concerned, and if we were confronted with doing something with it, we'll be out there trying to protect that law, but I think we can infer what's liable to happen to us when we get into court.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, it seems to me this committee is being asked to do the work of Water Policy Committee, which has a bit more history with this issue than this group, and I see us on the verge of doing something which has effects that are more far-reaching than we might suspect, and that perhaps in this instance we're better off doing nothing than doing something. It's questionable.
We're not in work session, but I'd like to give you a little bit of theory. I'd like to adopt the city's amendments to address their concerns. I'd like to adopt Mr. Nelson's amendments, and I think that both those amendments in there, we would be addressing the problem of not allowing another state to steal our water.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Dix.
Just to be devil's advocate for a second, it seems to me what I'm hearing is there was a court decision that says you can't have rules that affect other states differently than you affect people in the state. Is that what I'm...
Yeah.
And then if we adopt those amendments, that we will still have a divided system.
No.
Okay.
Go ahead. And the reason I'm saying that is because we haven't been into the process of site-specific requiring the law in the sub-basin or that sort of thing. And it looks like it would be the simplest way, and there would be less chance of creating mischief.
Well, let me ask Bill, because I don't have any problem with this municipality thing, because I think we've got to put that in there. We remove the sub-basin completely from this, Bill, what's the impact on what you're currently doing or currently required by law, Bill?
There's no impact, I think, Mr. Chairman, on what we're currently required to do by law. And if this became new law, we would have less projects that we would look at with those amendments than we would have if it passed in the form that it's before you now. I think that's the best answer I can give to your question.
What kinds of, I guess what I'm trying to get at, though, and it would make in part the difference between whether you had the 20 figure or the 50 figure, but what kinds of major interbasin changes might you have that would be removed from the department's review and scrutiny?
About all I can do, Mr. Chairman, is reflect on those that we have looked at over some period of time. I think the bulk of those interbasin transfers have tended to be ones that have been either considered or implemented by municipalities. We've probably seen more of that than we have anything else. There is an ongoing discussion about an interbasin transfer out of the upper end of the John Day into the upper end of the Umatilla River. Frankly, that project has been talked about with some enthusiasm for decades, and I don't see it any closer now than it was the first time I heard of it. Those are the sorts of things that we might end up looking at. I don't know that there would be any great difference in terms of the cubic feet per second figure that you're talking about. Once again, I'd stress that even if a project did not fall within the ambit of this bill, that does not mean that the commission is powerless to look at that and make a judgment about it in any event.
Other questions?
Mr. Chair, I just want to clarify. I think what I'm hearing is that if we adopt the amendments as proposed, we will in fact keep the status quo in terms of our internal workings and the ability of the commission to deal with water in the state, and also protect us in terms of the rest of the possible raid from out-of-state water uses. And that's what we're trying to do so that we're legally protected.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Jim Meyer from Oregon Trout again. From our standpoint, if the way I read this, if you take out the sub-basin, then that removes the Section 4 guidelines for any transfer within a major basin. If you remove the Section 4 guidelines, you also remove the Section 6 guidelines because they're tied together. Section 6 says if it's subject to Section 4, then it's also subject to Section 6.
Right.
So if that is correct, then I still disagree. You're not providing any protection for the public uses for transfers within major basins.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
Back in response to Representative Hostica's question and also to Mr. Myron's comment, the commission is required by existing statute to consider and protect the public uses and the waters of the state. And that means every water of the state. If you look closely at the language and keep in mind that what we're trying to do is to replace language that we suspect will be tubed by the Sporre's precedent and protect just the state of Oregon from being raided, as Representative Pickard said, by a preemptive strike. And you look at the language under paragraphs A, B, C, and D, or on through there, of Section 4, subsection 1 of Section 4, that language is intended to be insurmountable. And we do not need to apply insurmountable language to our own management internally within the state in the sub-basins. And if you extend the need legally to go beyond the protections at the major basin level, there is no end to that. You go to the sub-basin and you go to the tributary to that sub-basin and you continue to extend that, and then that doesn't end and that extension.
Representative Keesley.
Yeah, I want to make sure I really understand this with Section 6. This test under Section 6, Bill, shall reserve an amount of water adequate for future needs, including amounts sufficient to protect public uses, I think include, probably which include fisheries, which is one of the concerns here, subordinate the out-of-basin use to that reservation. Is that for basins now, for major basins, would Section 6 apply a stronger test with that regard than current law? Is that correct?
Section 6, I think Representative Kiesling would, our commission could currently do any of those things that are listed
but are you required
under
by
current
the,
law.
Are you required by the legislature, though, to apply
that
this
test? That was going to be
test.
Exactly my point. I think we could reach all of the things that are described there if our commission made that judgment. If this passes, it says to our commission, in order to do that, you must make this judgment.
Okay, you must make this judgment. For a basin.
For a basin.
That's so right. That is stronger for a basin than what now exists.
It ensures that at least that level of protection will be provided, where under current law, I think that assurance is not there,
okay.
Although it's reachable by our commission.
You could do it, but you're not required to do it. Now, in the case of the Willamette River, and a diversion from the Willamette River, you would have to apply this test now, newer, stronger test. In the case of the Santiam River, you could apply it, but would not be required to. Does that get to what you're trying to tell us, Jim?
If I understand what you said, Representative Kiesling, I think I agree with you.
Okay. And I think,
Mr. Chairman,
you want to keep in mind it isn't critical which river you're taking it out of. The question is, where does it come from and where does it go?
Right.
You can take water out of the upper end of the Santiam somewhere, I suppose, and figure a way to get it over into the Deschutes Basin. And if you did that, that would be water coming out of the Willamette and going into the Deschutes. And that, if it meets standards of size and so on, would be an interbasin transfer by anybody's standard.
Mr. Chairman, I might disagree just with Mr. Young's response to that question, in that the term basin of origin as defined on page one of the bill includes the major subbasins, so that the Santiam would be mandated to be considered in the same way.
Right, if you keep in the language
of
subbasin. Once you take that out, basin of origin then has a
then you
meaning.
Then the commission has the greater latitude to deal with that, rather than looking at all of the tests in Section 4. And if you look at those tests, read Test E on page 2, that the proposed appropriator would have to demonstrate injury to existing water rights of other appropriators or interference with planned uses or developments within the basin of origin. You would have to go to everyone who was thinking of planning anything anytime in the future in the Willamette Valley, in the Willamette Basin, which extends from Dexter to the Columbia River. Now you see, that kind of test doesn't need to be applied to a subbasin. You'd have to interview everyone and say, are you planning to do anything that would concern water? You say, and so that's the preemptive kind of test the bill creates.
Thank you. Yes. We'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 205 and we'll go to a work session on Senate Bill 205.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hostica.
I guess I would move the city's amendments if that's necessary to do.
Are you talking about
the
Water Resources,
water resources Department?
That's on this little top sheet. Okay.
Right.
Everyone understands what those do? Anyone have any objection to those amendments? Okay, we'll accept those amendments. Representative Hostica.
I'm done.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Parkinson.
I'd move amendments labeled -A4, submitted by Dave Nelson.
Okay, amendments -A4 been submitted by Mr. Nelson. Are there objections to these amendments?
I'm going to object, Mr. Chairman. I'd rather adopt a different approach and see where the committee wants to go by just bifurcating Mr. Nelson's amendments. But if the majority of the committee wants to adopt Mr. Nelson's amendments, I'd still support the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Kiesel.
I'd be curious what Representative Fostega would intend to propose.
What I'd say, as I indicated an earlier suggestion, was to make the issues of subbasins apply to the scrutiny that the Water Resources Department would apply, but not to the legislative scrutiny, and then raise the limit on how high a level that would be have to met from half a cubic feet to maybe 20 cubic feet.
Mr. Representative Hostica. I'm sorry, Representative Parkinson.
I'm supporting the Nelson amendments, and I think maybe I'm coming from a different place than he is. I don't know how it affects the people he represents, but I do see the possibility of doing unnecessary damage to municipal water supply systems in the future, where for a fairly minor transfer, it would require legislative action to allow them to do it. And then I think you'd have all the different groups coming in opposing it.
And
I was pleased to hear Representative Hostica say that if we adopted these amendments with his no vote, he'd still be in favor of the bill.
I would be in favor of the bill too, but I prefer his approach to saying that the subdivisions or the sub-basins would be under the clear scrutiny of the department, but the others would come to the legislature. But
Mr. Chairman, another thing, assuming that the two sets of amendments are compatible. I haven't studied them enough.
Let me ask you before I get to Representative Jones, where's Bill? Bill, is that your understanding that these amendments would be compatible?